shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt. You know what this programme is all about on Sputnik International. It's about getting people with strong views, strong opinions to express them without any interruption, really, and certainly without any whataboutery. You've not heard anything like this on the mainstream media. And I'm glad to say I've got today a man who really does speak from the lip, shoots from the lip literally and metaphorically. It's the terrorism and security expert Mike Yardley, who joins us now.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi, John. How are you? Good to be talking with you again.
And you as well, my friend. Let's start off by talking about this dreadful machete attack that happened in London last year. Guy got sentenced yesterday, but he only got a suspended sentence. He had an excuse that he'd been kidnapped 10 days earlier, and that he was carrying the machete for self-defence when he attacked somebody else in a road rage incident. I think this is a dreadful judgment. What about you?
Well, we don't know the details of the case, John, but it sounds like a pretty lame excuse. I'm reminded of a story told to me by a friend who's a police detective, or was a police detective, where he was in Putney High Street and somebody was going to attack a lady in front with an axe. He got out of a vehicle with an axe. And happily, two off-duty police officers just happened to be there as he was raising the axe to this lady's windscreen. So this sort of stuff does go on in London, and it is terrifying. And it does seem that the whole knife deal is out of control now.
Where do you put the blame for that? Do you put that on Mayor Khan or on Dick of the Yard, Cressida Dick, or is it the police cuts, or is it a combination?
I think I blame it on our social values. I think if you go into the black communities in London, I think one thing is clear. I mean, there is an awful lot of black-on-black crime, particularly knife crime, significant gun crime. And I think the people that are involved, the kids that are involved in the drug gangs, they're certainly more afraid of each other than they are of the police these days or of the legal system. And I think there is part of the problem. There are other complex social aspects to this. But really, I think you've got to punish people really, really hard.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
That means locking them up for a long time, not finding excuses for giving them suspended sentences, but actually saying this is the law. If you carry a knife on the street, you're going to go to prison for years, not months.
And the same with a gun, obviously.
Yes, but the situation with guns is complex, and often the media do not tell us the full picture. I mean, this is a very interesting issue. I mean, like you, my memory goes back a long way. Now, it ought to be stated so people understand when they're listening to this that Britain has very little gun crime. Our firearms homicide rate is extremely low. It's about 50 incidents a year at the moment, I think, something like that, or getting the precise figures out of the Home Office is difficult. 50 firearms homicides a year. Do you know what? A generation ago, it used to be double that, about 100. But to put that into perspective, in the US, it's something like 10,000 with 30,000 firearms deaths overall a year. So there's very little firearms crime, relatively speaking, in the UK. It is overrepresented by the media. And moreover, there seems to be an interesting agenda in the media, and it crosses the channels at the moment. For example, I've seen recent documentaries on both the BBC and ITV, which look to me as if they're pushing for new firearms legislation in the UK, possibly. And they're giving the public the idea that there's more firearms homicide at the moment than in fact there is. There's actually something like 50% the homicide with guns in the UK now as there was a generation ago.
So therefore, does that mean we don't need to arm the police? Because that's what I was going to go on to ask you.
I think when you look at the situation today, it probably, I'm very reluctant to say this, and a lot of police officers will not want to carry guns, but I think there is an argument for the routine arming of the police. One of the problems we have in this society is that the guns are considered a bit weird and strange, whereas in the US, as you will have noted when you go there, they're considered pretty normal. They're part of everyday life. But so people see a gun in the UK and it's sort of shock horror. It's what I would call, as a psychologist, a super stimulus. And that does alter the way people react and the way individual police officers react to the concept of arming. Now, not every police officer could carry a gun. Some won't be psychologically suited. Some will have physical impediment to carrying a gun. But I certainly think we could have more armed police officers. But that does change the nature of your society. There's certainly a good case for universal tasers.
Let me just ask you a question on that then. If we armed or routinely armed the police, and you're a shooter yourself, aren't you? A professional shooter. Do you actually think it would make us safer?
Well, I have a very odd biography, personally speaking, but I've shot in competition, I've shot for my country, and indeed I've shot people to use pistols in a combat situation, although that is not my main thing these days, John. Would it make us safer? I think that when you see the situations that police officers are routinely asked to face now, I think that certainly it would make them safer in some of those situations. And I think, therefore, as a society, we must try and, you know, prevent them being injured. Would it make us all safer? Very difficult to know. The problem is, as soon as you start tooling up, if you want to call it that, there is the danger that the bad guys will tool up in reaction to what you do. So it's a delicate balance to be achieved. I do think what we need, let me put it another way, I think we need a much tougher approach. You talk to police officers, and I talk to police officers all the time. They are hampered by bureaucracy. They're hampered because they cannot use their own discretion anymore. You know, I was talking to someone the other day. They were telling me probably 15 years ago, they were caught speeding as a kid in the high street, going far, far too fast. And the policeman who stopped this chap, knew him and said, look, you know what you're going to do, son? You're going to go home. You're going to sit down. You're not going to leave the house for a day. And if I see you out, that's you done. You'll be properly done. But if you comply with what I've just said, no more will be said. Policemen can't do that sort of stuff anymore. They're hampered by a bureaucracy that's got out of control. They're hampered by PC. There's all sorts of stuff that prevents them actually doing the sensible thing.
So would you bring back stop and search? A lot of criticism of Khan and indeed Theresa May, both of them describing it as racist. What do you say?
I think that's bullshit, John. I think, yes, I would bring back stop and search, and I would leave it to the discretion of police officers who are much more aware of this sort of stuff than they were. I mean, you know, some police officers probably were racist in the past.
Without a doubt.
And moreover, meantime in London, you know, there is an awful lot of black-on-black crime. I mean, you know, certain sorts of crime feature more in the black community than in others. And that is an issue, and police officers are aware of that. No, I would bring back stop and search without a doubt. But most of all, I'd bring back officer discretion in lots of different situations.
Okay, let's just widen it a moment. A damning report last week about the four terrorist atrocities we had last year. Just first question, arming the police, would that have helped, for example, in London Bridge, Westminster, in that particular attack? I mean, obviously it wouldn't in the Manchester Arena. We'll go on to where the spooks got it wrong in a moment. But just arming the police, would that help? Because you could take out these drivers quicker.
Yes, it certainly might have done in that case. Now, of course, in America, the National Rifle Association will say the answer to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Mm. But then the question becomes, how far do you take that? Should people in the UK be allowed to arm themselves with guns to protect themselves? Well, I think that would be a very foolish thing to do on a grand scale. It's done occasionally now. There are certain individuals, VIPs, who do have permission to protect themselves with firearms, but they're in very unique high-threat situations. Generally, this is not something that's allowed under the British system.
Okay, so going to that wider issue, as I say, absolute condemnation in this report to ministers about the failures over Manchester and Salman Abidi in particular. Is it fair to criticise the security services, or have they got a very unenviable task at the moment? Or are there things the politicians could do to help? We're told there's 23,000 people who want to do us harm. Your views?
Well, I think it is a terribly difficult situation, and we always hear about the failures. You're not going to hear about the successes when things are stopped and we never hear any more about it. What I think you have got to do, and I think this has been accepted in government now, is the people that are on the sharp end of this have to have the resources and the personnel to achieve it. There is another side to it, though. There is the civil liberties side to it, because we are living in a surveillance society, 24/7 surveillance, a more authoritarian society. Everybody wants to know every detail about you. You go online and your whole personal history seems to be open to any large organization to plunder as they will. And I do have one personal theory, and it's not one I hear spouted much, and perhaps it needs a broader airing, and it's this. If you create a more authoritarian society, if you create what is in effect a police state of one sort or another, there is a danger that in the alienation that you create in doing that, that you actually make more trouble likely, that you make it, that criminal activity will increase, some things like drug addiction may increase, people may become personally more alienated and more stressed. So the idea that control, we seem to be in an age where the politicians anyway always think that law and control is the answer. There is a counter philosophical argument that actually excessive control is part of the problem.
When it comes to the jihadi threat, how big is that threat in your opinion?
Oh, I think the jihadi threat is substantial and probably growing. And then, of course, you have to look to our own involvement in that threat. I mean, you have this extraordinary situation in the Middle East where our allies have actually actively promoted some of the terrorists that we face now.
You're listening to The John Gaunt Show on Sputnik International, Shooting from the Lip, with my special guest, Mike Yardley, the terrorism and security expert. Mike, how high do you rate the terrorist threat at the moment, jihadist threat to the UK?
It's a very significant threat, John. And it's interesting how it's developed over the years. I mean, my memory goes back a long way with this. I mean, I was in the Middle East myself in the 1980s in Beirut, and I was seized in Beirut before Terry Waite, something I have occasionally chatted to Terry about. But then, of course, the terrorists were secular. They were Marxist-Leninist terrorists, you know, revolutionary communists. Then we've had all the things that happened with the Gulf Wars, and we've had the development of what appears to be fundamentalistic religious terrorism, same people, more or less, same sort of deal. And the big thing that really strikes me, and I think most people now are aware of it, but they certainly weren't aware of it, is that a lot of these terrorists are funded by our allies in the Middle East, or have been. And there's been a lot of complex politics behind the scenes where, for example, the Saudis have backed a lot of very, very dodgy groups, and they've then used those as a weapon to achieve their strategic purpose in the Middle East. But there's also the consequence of that backfiring on us. In Saudi Arabia, they have telethons where their charities ostensibly for good Muslim causes, and often a percentage of the funds from those are siphoned off and go to radical fundamentalists. So that is something that has changed fairly recently. The other thing that's fascinating, which I was looking at historically, is that towards the end of the Second World War, we started to get in touch with certain people in the German intelligence services. And certain dirty deals were done where they would hand over their resources with regards to, for example, penetration of what were then Soviet networks, and also in the Middle East, the Muslim Brotherhood. The Germans, of course, were trying to spy on the Russians, and they were also trying to infiltrate the Muslim Brotherhood as a weapon to use against the British. Now, this was handed over, those contacts within the Muslim Brotherhood were handed over to what would evolve into the CIA. And then when Nasser came to power, those people were essentially thrown out of Egypt, the leadership, and they went to Saudi Arabia. But they became too hot to handle in some ways, and the Saudis sent them off elsewhere, for example, to Afghanistan. There's a lot of very interesting, murky stuff going on that a lot of people are completely unaware of. But what I thought was really interesting, and I did not know, was that the German intelligence had resources within the Muslim Brotherhood that were then passed on to the Americans. Now, we can never quite clearly understand. We see all these groups in the Middle East. We never know who is who. They evolve. You know, you have Al-Qaeda and then you have ISIS. But it's all really the same thing. It's the same energy. And there's the point now that we must put more pressure on the Saudis and others to stop funding these people.
OK, let's come back to that in a moment. Just hold that thought there if you can. You're listening to Mike Yardley. He's on Shooting From The Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. Don't dare go away. There's plenty more to talk about. I want to talk about the Saudi funding of mosques in our own country. We want to talk about Brexit. We'll talk about Donald Trump and that caravan. And we'll talk about Nigel Farage. Is he right when he says, send these migrants who are ending up on Dover beaches back to France? This is Sputnik International.
Shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt. Shooting from the lip.
Welcome back. You're listening to Sputnik International, Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt, and my guest, the security and terrorism expert, Mike Yardley. Mike, you were just talking about Saudi Arabia. Now, they're funding a lot of radical mosques in our country. Should that be stopped?
Yes. I mean, this is madness, John. I mean, what we have is a situation where the Saudis and others in that area are looking to the time when maybe they can't make the money they do at the moment out of selling oil. And one of the things they can do to spread their influence is to use this dynamic force of radical Islam as a means of getting into all sorts of countries, the UK, France, the US. And what we've seen in the UK is a proliferation of Salafist radical mosques. Now, I don't think we should allow that at all, because those Salafist mosques create a safe haven, create networks. They're completely against our national interest. And moreover, they terrorise sometimes a lot of British Muslims. I mean, they're bad news.
So you would stop all funding. What about the fact we're also selling them arms, which they're using in the Yemen? I mean, is that just real politique, or should we stop that as well?
Well, I have an old-fashioned, and if you, I hesitate to use the word these days, Christian perspective on this. I think that it's a bad deal. I think we're funding something where are the weapons that, you know, keep the British lathes turning. Or the payment for those the weapons is immoral. We are making money out of something that is completely wrong. And you do have to draw a line somewhere, even if it does cost you as far as the national exchequer is concerned.
OK, thank you for your honesty on that. Let me just move this on a little bit if I can. The head of the British Army, the new head of the British Army, says that Russia is a bigger threat to us than Islamic terrorism. Is he correct?
Well, there I do sympathise with that point of view, because whilst I think that there is a grave threat from Islamic terrorism and that part of it relates to funding and support from our erstwhile allies in the Middle East, I do think from a British perspective that the Russian Federation is a major threat. And I understand it. I mean, let's put a little background into this. I mean, we've had a long, long relationship with Russia, our great allies in World War II. We had the Cold War after that, of course, but we've had British ambassadors in Russia in the 1500s. Mm. The relationship between the two nations goes back a long way. And I think the Russian people actually like the English people and have respect for them. That said, from a strategic point of view, you can understand where the Russians are coming from, but they do have an aggressive line at the moment. They are rearming, and they have enormous resources. I mean, when you look at the scale, let's take, for example, the number of tanks the Russians have got. Something like, they're different figures, but let's say it's 15,000. Do you know how many tanks the UK has got these days?
No,
I'm told 50 that work, maybe on paper 100 to 150, but in actuality, maybe 50 that work.
But do you actually think Russia have any ambitions to actually do us harm? Or is it about the expansion of Russia that we should fear?
Well, yeah, let me just continue for a moment. I mean, the Russians have got 1,300 fighter aircraft. The Americans have got 1,800. But on a lot of, you know, where you look at a lot of weaponry, the Russians are very, very well armed, you might say overarmed, and their capability is growing. And President Putin is directing massive resources into improving all Russian forces, including nuclear forces. And that is the bit that worries me, because when you have as many nuclear weapons as you see in both Russia, the US, and elsewhere in the world, that does create a potential for things to go wrong. And that does concern me. It concerns me that the Russians test our airspace and our waters on an almost daily basis with their aircraft and their submarines, for example. It concerns me that the Russians have quite an aggressive policy in this respect at the moment. So, yes, I think that the Russians are a greater strategic threat to the UK than anyone else. But I think we also have to put that into a perspective. And I think we ought to be trying to build up better relations with Russia.
Well, that's the question I wanted to ask you, because after the Skripal affair, whichever way you look at it, only one person died. Yeah, tragic as that is. But don't you have to think, well, is all this anti-Russian rhetoric from Boris Johnson and from Theresa May, is it sensible? Would it be not better to have jaw-jaw rather than war-war, especially in the light of the Saudi murder of the journalist in Turkey? I don't see a load of Saudi diplomats getting thrown out of loads of European countries. See where I'm coming from, Mike?
I see where you're coming from, but I'm not going to write off only one death as being unimportant. It was
Fair to me. You understand what I was saying.
I do. I do understand what you're saying, John, but it was a disgraceful attack. And the Russian response to it was silly because it was transparently a lie. And a lot of people saw that. I don't think it was in the Russian interest.
There's still a lot of holes in this. Hang on a minute. There's still a lot of holes in our government's narrative over it. I mean, do we really believe the perfume bottle was left for 4 months?
Let me just say this as well, though. You can understand why the Russians were going after one of their ex-agents
to
become a double agent. That is perfectly rational. But unfortunately, they didn't do a very good job of it. And the whole thing, you know, went to a hell in a handcart. And an innocent person, and very nearly several innocent people, died.
Okay.
So that is completely unacceptable. But can you understand it? Of course you can. Now, meantime, should we be trying to achieve better relations with Russia? Of course we should. But what worries me with Russia at the moment, if something internally should happen in the country, if there should be some sort of internal turmoil or conflict for whatever reason, that then the Kremlin's eye might look beyond Russia to try and distract attention from that, should that ever happen. And what also worries me greatly are these competing nuclear arsenals that the great powers have. And I'm just going to interject here what my eldest son sent to me, who became a brilliant chess player playing for his country and is now a very clever guy in the City of London. But when I first described nuclear weapons to him when he was a kid, he said to me, "Daddy, they shouldn't make those." And I think he was right. The trouble is we've got the bloody things, John, and we have to deal with it.
Okay.
And dealing with it means we need to form, you know, we need to improve our relations with Russia. We need to do something about this new Cold War, which seems to be beginning, which is not in anyone's interest.
Okay, that's good, because that allows us now to go on to Donald Trump on the other side of the coin with his nuclear arsenal and, of course, his withdrawal from the nuclear deal. But let's move on to Trump in general. A lot of people accusing him of only using the caravan, for example, for doing exactly what you said the Russians might do to divert our attention. Or do you think he's got an absolute right to stop those people getting over the Mexican border, even using tear gas?
Well, I think both things are true. I mean, you can rely on Trump to showboat whenever he can. So that's in his nature. But does he have the right to stop those people coming into the US? Let's take that a little bit deeper. I find it remarkable that the British media seem to think they seem to report on this in a neutral way, as if it's okay for people to try and cross the border of a sovereign nation by force. Of course it's not okay.
Of course.
And of course the US and Trump have the right to stop those people coming over en masse.
So, with any method available to him?
Well, it depends on the situation, doesn't it? Because I noticed the BBC coverage was saying that most of these people were peaceful. Well, it's hardly a peaceful act to try and storm a sovereign national border. So there comes a point when, you know, you first make verbal warning, then you make verbal warning again and probably again. Then if that doesn't work, you may try to use some sort of physical barrier. If that doesn't work, you might fire tear gas. And in the gravest extreme, you might go beyond that. Every nation, unless perhaps you go to some of the, you know, the wilder political forums of the left, every nation has a right to protect its borders.
Okay, understand and that.
It does what interests me
no,
here,
but
John.
I need to move on, Mike, because there's so many other things I want to talk to you about. Do you think then Trump generally is turning out to be a good president for the USA?
Well, certainly he seems to have done a lot for the US economy. But the thing that he hasn't done that's good in the US is he's fractured the society. There is this fault line in the US now that looks almost like the time before the Civil War. And my own father, who is a senior US naval officer, amongst other things, and a very bright old guy, sadly now gone, but the last thing he was trying to do on his deathbed, and this was amazing because his politics was very right wing, is he wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton because he thought Trump was going to damage America.
Do you think Trump has damaged America?
I think Trump is an expression of the television age, of the celebrity age. So I think America, as the UK, as most other countries, have damaged themselves recently. I think we have such poor value systems. I think you see wherever you go, you see people that are becoming more frustrated, more angry, people that are just not coping with the basics of everyday life. And you see that in the US, where I've traveled a lot and where I went to school partly. And you see it in the UK, and indeed you see it in France, where you see these mass demonstrations at the moment. And you see it, you know, in Russia and in what were the satellite countries that have achieved their independence now. This is a universal phenomenon of modern life and a very unhappy one.
OK, let's bring back to the UK, and no better symbol of the UK than the White Cliffs of Dover. People landing now on those beaches, Nigel Farage saying, let's send them straight back to France so they get the message. Is he right?
Yeah, I think Nigel Farage is right. Send them back. And I sometimes get the impression with the French that they just pass the problem on to us and then turn it into a British problem and pretend it's not their problem too. How did these people get onto French territory, for example? You know, yes, it's partly their problem and we should send them back. That should be the first thing that we do in all of these cases.
I've got to conclude now, but I've got to ask you in a word, is Theresa May going to survive?
I don't think her deal will survive. Whether or not she survives is another matter, but I think this is a bad deal and I think it's naive to assume that when the Europeans really think about it, that they can't come up with better, because Mercedes and VW and BMW will still want to sell us their cars. And that is of critical importance to the economy of Europe, Germany in particular, but Europe generally. So no, there'll be a better deal.
Absolutely. And I agree with you, Mike Yardley, security and terrorism expert. Thank you for joining us today. Next week on Shooting From The Lip, we'll have another person with big views, controversial views, or just big ideas, where they'll be given the time to expand on them. You've been listening to John Gaunt. It's Shooting From The Lip. It's Sputnik International. Thanks for your company.
Shooting From The Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting From The Lip.